Catholic and Protestant Conversations with Jason and Kurt, brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Catholic and Protestant Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. This is Jason Bramley on the air with Kurt Benkendorf today, bringing you Catholic and Protestant Conversations, our conversations about faith, family, and finance. How are you doing today, Kurt?
I'm doing fantastic.
Since this is our first show, I figured we'd introduce ourselves. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
What would you like to know about me?
What kind of guy are you?
I'm a pretty good guy.
That's all you have to say?
Well, I don't know. Everyone sees himself as being good. I'm sure there's a lot of improvement I need to make about myself.
We're going to cover improvement later today. We're going to talk about the gospel reading for today, which covers the Beatitudes, all about improvement.
Well, that is what I was looking at today, and I see myself needing to go a long distance with this.
Well, all the way to heaven, hopefully.
That's what I think I need to do.
So you've been here in Bloomington for how long?
Let's see, probably 30 years.
And you're married?
Yes, Jamie is my wife.
And my mother-in-law.
And your mother-in-law.
And you have three beautiful daughters.
That I do.
And don't be shy. Tell the folks what they want to hear. You are a founding member of Fortran.
Yeah, that goes way back many years, my rock band days.
Yeah, out of Streeter, Illinois.
Out of Streeter, Illinois.
All right. Well, I'm sure some of the folks listening probably remember Fortran.
Now, I hope one of them does. But there is something that came out of all of that. I had one of the members that I personally feel that I helped discover and helped, and he became a very big singer.
Well, that's fantastic. Who
was
that?
He recorded several albums in that on major labels.
Wow, well, that's fantastic.
His name is Kevin Chalfant.
Well, maybe one of these days we can have him on the radio.
Well, that'd be good.
So you are the, which end? Do you want to tell which end of this conversation you are for folks? Are you the Catholic or are you the Protestant?
I am the Protestant.
All right. And you attend a local Protestant church here in Bloomington?
Yep. First Press.
First Press. And how long have you been a member there?
Probably 12 years.
Okay. And I am then obviously the Catholic end of the conversation. I converted, you've probably heard me on the radio with Bob and Lynn. I converted at Epiphany 8 years ago, and now attend Mass at St. Patrick's Church of Myrna. And so, like I said, Kurt and I are going to bring you our life story as it unfolds. Everybody always tells, I think, both of us that we should have our own reality TV show.
So we definitely need
that.
Yeah,
so now we're going to have a reality radio show, and we're going to center it around our faith, our family, and the thing that I do every day at Meyer Bramley Insurance, which is financial planning and insurance for folks. So the three things that tend to come up most often in our lives. So without further ado, I guess let's go ahead and jump into the show. I thought we would talk a little bit about what's been going on recently. You and I got to travel with my oldest daughter, Riley, to Washington, D.C. back at the beginning of December.
That was an awesome experience.
What was your favorite part?
There's all so many. One of the favorites was the Ford Theater. And actually seeing where Lincoln was taken across the street and his bed. Well, it wasn't his actual bed.
Because a replica,
because the regular bed or his bed is up at a museum in Chicago. I think that's what they said.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And so that was interesting. And also the politics of the time. There was a lot of dissension in the country, and there were a lot of things that were happening at that point.
Are you talking about when Lincoln was shot, or are you talking about recently?
And that's kind of what I'm alluding to, there are periods of time where the country is in different situations, and we are in kind of a turmoil right now, and it would be nice to see this one head in a direction where maybe some of the gospel that's even, you know, at our access, that would be very good to follow and for all people to follow, so that instead of having it turn into something disastrous to our country, but moves forward and very positive.
I agree. I think it seems like we continue to become more and more divided as a country. It seems like we've become more polarized around most issues. It doesn't seem like you find many folks in the center of an issue anymore. It seems like there's very fringe.
And that's faith.
Absolutely.
Because faith is not, it's not pulling us back. We're not going back to faith. We're facing conflict. And we want to always win the battle. We always want to be right. We always want, we don't want to give in and be humble to other people. And both sides need to learn to share viewpoints.
I think it's interesting as Christians, I think we often feel very torn. You know, we get accused a lot of times for being judgmental or you know, trying to take, I guess, the moral high ground. I think the interesting thing is that when you believe in the faith that we share as Christians as strongly as we do, I think it lends itself to the necessity of having arguments with people. Unfortunately, they tend to become arguments, but the necessity to want to reach out to others, to want to help others see the relationship that we have with Christ or the love that we experience, the grace and his mercy and all those kinds of things. So I think the unfortunate thing is we cherish the faith that we have so much that it a lot of times it comes out in a negative light when we try to share it with others who aren't ready mm-hmm. to accept it.
I agree. One thing I was going to ask you now is what was your favorite during our visit to Washington?
I think my favorite. So we took Riley, who's 11. She attends school at Corpus Christi.
Who's your daughter?
My daughter, yep. So the daughters, all of our four children and the fifth who's on the way, I think basically have boy names, even the girls. So we have two girls. The oldest two are girls, Riley and Reese. So those can both pass for boy names. And then we have two boys currently, but Riker and Rhett. Yep.
That's supposed to be strong.
Right. Yes. With strong
women.
Strong, independent women is what we're going for. So we named we gave them boy names, I guess. And then the baby that's come in here in a month-ish, around March 1st, which my birthday is February 29th, is going to be Rogan. So my favorite was, I think, getting to see Riley experience the learning and primarily the museum for the Holocaust. She, in fourth grade, experienced a lot about the museums at school, which is why she's been asking me to take her for the last couple of years. And so when we decided to go and you jumped at the opportunity to come also, she really enjoyed the museums and the monuments, but she had already seen a lot of those. She had no experience really going into the Holocaust Museum. And so for her and I, it was a very educational experience. There was a lot of questions. Obviously, the biggest one continued to be why. How did this happen? Why did this happen? She and I went to Pearl Harbor when she was younger, and she would have been 5 or 6 at the time, and we went to Hawaii and got to experience Pearl Harbor. And so the interesting thing is that it kind of 5 years later was basically the same conversation. Why did this happen? How did this happen? And so I got to kind of flash back to that experience. But I think her learning about the, you know, unfortunately, the atrocities that we've experienced as a human race, and hopefully teaching her, you know, obviously the history so that it doesn't repeat itself, that was probably my most influential experience.
Yes, that has to be one of the most touching museums I think I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I thought so as well. So then we also went to Gettysburg.
Oh, that I've. Yeah.
I was going to say, until I asked you today, you told me Gettysburg was always your favorite. You switched it up on me.
Well,
you
mentioned Washington. This isn't in Washington.
Well, right, but it was on the same trip.
Okay. That was on the same trip.
So you liked Gettysburg?
Oh, I loved it.
You got to see a bunch of ghosts?
No, I didn't see any ghosts, but I relived the battle, though.
Were you there the first time? I mean, I know you're older.
I'm probably old enough.
Now, speaking of being old enough, this is a pre-recorded show. So this is actually Thursday that we're here in the studio. What is this? January 28th.
26th.
Today is January 26th,
yeah.
Which happens to be a famous person's birthday.
Yeah, right.
How old are you today?
I can't believe you're making me do this today.
We should, maybe before we're done with this show, we can sing happy birthday.
I was supposed to go out to dinner tonight, and you've got me in here doing this show.
I took you out to dinner last night.
I know.
Well, then what are you complaining about?
Well.
Yeah.
I guess I can't.
I
guess I got to forgive him, right?
Well, so we went out to dinner last night. We took the whole family out. We put all the little kids at a different table, which was nice.
Yeah.
And for us.
For a while.
Nobody else at the restaurant.
And then they're climbing under the tables, climbing over the tables.
Well, that tends to happen. So I brought up the fact that Riley goes to Corpus Christi Catholic School. So I did want to mention that this week is going to be Catholic Schools Week. So starting Sunday, it will be the kickoff to Catholic Schools Week. There's going to be a spaghetti dinner at Corpus Christi on Sunday night, which I'm sure you'll come to. You know why?
Why?
It's free.
I'm in.
Free spaghetti from 4:30 to 6. So I'm sure you'll be there. It'll be Catholic Schools Week, which also coincides then with Catholic school registration for next year. So for anybody out there who is possibly a new parent or a grandparent of a child who hasn't yet attended preschool or school, I would encourage you to check out the 3 Catholic preschools and elementary schools that we have here locally. They're all fantastic. Riley went to preschool at Epiphany. They have a beautiful new preschool they built a couple years ago when they did their renovation or their remodel. They have fantastic teachers over there. Now she goes to Corpus Christi, not because we didn't like the school, but because we switched parishes. So we started going to Holy Trinity, which is now Corpus Christi. So, and then St. Mary's, all 3 of which are fantastic Catholic schools. I had a quote here from Bishop Makumba in Kenya. He said, "For the Catholic Church, faith and holistic quality education are inseparable." And I think that that provides a good basis for why we send our kids to Catholic school. We were part of a video program. If you check out CorpusChristiSaints.org, there'll be a bunch of videos that come up at the top that talk about why different parents like the school. And again, this applies, I think, to all Catholic education, but at Corpus Christi specifically. And we actually, I think, Kurt, you know, we took Riley out of Corpus Christi when we moved out to the Downs area and sent her to Tri-Valley. And I think that my wife, Kara, and I really experienced the family and community at Corpus Christi that we didn't feel like we received that. Not that it's a bad school, but just we get so much out of our current community that we headed back quickly.
Well, that's your side. And from my side, I did notice that, and that some of the feedback was that you guys had told me that she was so far ahead of the other students at Tri-Valley.
Yeah, the Catholic schools tend to rank much higher. They have typically smaller classrooms. In fact, I was just looking today at some of the statistics on the website, and 99% of all Catholic high school students graduate high school, 99.1%. And then of those, almost 85% go to college, which is basically double the national average of public school kids. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Can I throw in something?
Absolutely.
Is this maybe, I don't understand the voucher system, but that they're trying to maybe pursue in legislation. But I would think that with a voucher, instead of going to a public school, you could take that and use that towards a private school. And I think for a lot of people, and look at some of your inner cities and that, where they could take that and go to a Catholic school and get a high education while they work on the city schools, because that's not an immediate situation. That appears to be long term to get that all turned around.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that as a father of 2 Catholic school kids and 3 more headed in that direction, that any type of voucher system I would probably support or be appreciative of. We have a couple properties here in town that we rent, and then our property, obviously. So we tend to write fairly sizable checks in property taxes that, you know, obviously a lot of that money goes to the public school system, which I'm happy to support, but would love to reclaim a portion of that then when I have to write tuition checks also. So, yeah, I mean, I would be supportive of any type of...
Well, and I'm just saying, I think there's some good thought behind it, you know, and some goodness that could come out of this if it's...
I think one of the other
implemented correctly.
Oh, yeah. So there's always the catch is the implementation. I think one of the other things that they try to accomplish through that program possibly is some type of competitiveness between schools in hopes that, you know, competitiveness would drive higher test scores or better, you know, teaching or better responsiveness to the parents, those types of things. Typically anytime you have competition, it ends up being better for the consumer. And so why not breed competition in, you know, I was reading an article the other day and it talked about how many different school districts we have in the state of Illinois. And it was some astounding number.
Oh, I used to know. It used to be
thousands or something, right?
It used to be like 700 and some. So it's probably 1,000.
And I want to say that it was the state of Florida that switched to a county-based school district system. And by doing that, they eliminated, you know, a third or half of their schools, then cutting tuition and, or, you know, administrative costs and everything.
Administrative costs are just ridiculous. When you think that there's high paying an administration in each one of those, you've got a lot of money there.
Yeah, that is a big deal. So the other things that are coming up for Catholic Schools Week, aside from registration, the Knights of Columbus at Epiphany are going to have their second annual Princess Winter Ball, which is going to be February 4th from 6 to 9. They are asking that you sign up ahead of time so they can have a head count as they're going to provide some appetizers and snacks. So it'll be next Saturday from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock. They'll have a DJ. I can tell you, I took Reese last year because of my two girls.
Yeah,
she's the princess of the two. And she had a blast. We went to the castle for dinner because, of course, we had to dress up like a princess. So we went to the castle for dinner, which I don't know if you know what the castle is.
I do.
Have you eaten there before?
I didn't know.
Tony Roma's, because it's at Jumer. So she refers to it as the castle.
Oh, I thought you meant the castle theater.
No. The restaurant that looks like a castle, Tony Roma's. So we went there for dinner. She was dressed like a princess. We went to Epiphany and had a great time dancing. They had a photo booth. They had appetizers. The Knights of Columbus did a great job. I was shocked when I was at the Knights of Columbus meeting out at Epiphany and they said they were going to have this daddy-daughter dance. I figured there'd be like 20 kids show up, maybe 25. And there was like 200 people there. And so I was just absolutely shocked at how well the turnout was, how receptive they were. The girls had a fantastic time. So I would encourage you again to go to kfc6498.org. It's right at the top of their website. You can RSVP and take your daughters out. Did you ever do daddy-daughter dances?
No.
That wasn't your type of thing?
Well, I don't think that there was any that I could be involved in then. I don't think.
You were out playing in the band. You weren't dancing on
No, I wasn't.
That was before that.
I was probably a bad father.
Oh, geez. You don't give yourself enough credit.
I don't know what to say to that.
Well, I tell you what you could say. How about next year you can take one of my daughters to the father-daughter dance. It could be the grandfather-daughter dance. That way I don't have to go.
There you go.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. This is our first block here on our radio show. We thank you for being with us, and we'll be back shortly.
Thank you.
60 Seconds with Mother Angelica.
Sin divorces us from God. Until we pay, we have to pay. Some people pay for everlasting punishment because they will not ask forgiveness. And some people pay in purgatory because they never use this life to cleanse their souls. You know, I look upon every difficulty. I try. I don't think I always make it. But I try to make every difficulty an opportunity. Some difficulties make you humble. Some make you forgive, which makes it pleasing to God. Our dear Lord himself said on the cross, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do. Have you ever said that to your neighbor when you forgave them?
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
And we're back.
That we are.
I think there's one person still left listening to us.
All right.
And he's sitting over there on the other side of the control board. So I figured we would cover a couple of the changes that we've had this week in regards to pro-life, pro-choice, and the funding of abortions. Since Donald Trump took office, there were two fairly sizable legislative changes or executive orders. I guess one was a legislative change, one was an executive order. And they tend to, and I don't know how much you know about this, Kurt. Have you been following the pro-life?
A little bit.
All right, a little bit. So tomorrow, so again, this is recorded on Thursday. So tomorrow, there's going to be a big pro-life rally, March for Life in Washington, D.C.
I was aware of that.
And President Trump gave a interview to ABC News the other night and was very, I guess, somewhat critical anyway, that the media didn't do enough to cover the pro-life marches there in D.C. Obviously, the march last week, which unfortunately, I think turned out to be very, ended up being very just pro-choice or pro-abortion, got tons of press coverage. Did you see any of that over the weekend?
Yes, I did. And some of that I didn't want to see.
I saw you snapping photos of it on your phone.
Yeah.
So he was very critical that the mainstream media doesn't cover enough of the pro-life. I think I actually heard that a lot of the pro-life groups were excluded from that, from the march last week.
I heard that also.
So we'll see how many show up this weekend. I think I know myself personally, and I'm sure a lot of the pro-life groups here in town will, and the other groups, but particularly the pro-life, will be praying for them, for their safety in getting there, but then also just in being in the nation's capital, that, you know, nothing bad happens, that everything goes smoothly. But I also wanted to talk to you about the Mexico City agreement. Are you familiar with that? So you see, Kurt actually was at the Ronald Reagan convention. And so
that's right.
You were in 1980.
I guess it'd been 84.
In 84. So the year I was born. I was being born and you were hanging out with Ronald Reagan.
Indirectly,
indirect. You were in the same building as him.
That's right.
All right, so there you go. So Ronald Reagan was the first one to limit funding, international funding, to, health organizations that promote abortions. And George Bush Sr., her father, continued to keep that America's practice. And then Bill Clinton reversed it. And allowed that funding to continue. And then George Bush, the son, brought it back. So it's gone back and forth every time Republicans and Democrats switch control of the White House. It comes and goes. And so now that Donald Trump, the current Republican president, is back in, he's re-signed that into executive order. So a lot of the pro-life groups are very happy. They said that currently there's, 2 million babies that have been saved over the last 30 years in regards to that legislation being enacted. So I think that that's a fantastic thing. I was interested to read that the United States stance on abortion funding internationally is always that we don't provide money to fund abortions. I think a lot of the times when we end up splitting hairs on this, and I think it happens here domestically as well, is that we say, well, we'll provide funding to a group who does abortions,
right,
but they aren't allowed to use that money. They have to use the different money to fund abortions. And that's always struck me as, I'd say, maybe less than peculiar. I know in my household, we have to pay the mortgage. It doesn't really matter if I use my paycheck or my wife's.
I agree with that.
So I think that's always been a hair that gets split by some of the pro-choice groups. And I don't necessarily think that it's probably a fair one. The other news out of the House of Representatives, the House of Representatives voted 238 to 183 to permanently ban taxpayer funding of abortion. So basically what they did is they took the funding of abortions out of what we would call the Obamacare bill And so I think that that was a big win for pro-life groups as well. I know that a lot of the Republican representatives were in favor of that. Some of them had very strong words to say in regards to the funding of abortion. So I feel like we're headed in the right direction, this being the 44th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. Hopefully we continue to stand with the unborn for their protection and continue to, you know, not only limit funding, but hopefully eventually eliminate abortions altogether. It was Representative Trent Frank, Republican out of Arizona, that said, the real question before us is, does abortion kill a little baby? And if so, he said, then abortion is the greatest human genocide in history. So we talked last segment about the Holocaust, in which, you know, 9 million people ultimately were killed, 6 million Jews, and then 3 million other folks. And he's saying that if abortion is the killing of a baby, then that's the greatest human genocide in history. So I think that that really comes down to the question of, obviously, when does life begin, at conception or at natural birth?
Well, if you're asking me.
Well, yeah.
Well, obviously, it's the minute the two different, the egg and the sperm, connect, and life at that moment takes place.
So I think that that's the question that we ultimately just need to have as not only as a society, but as a legislative branch, right? That they don't want to have a conversation about, because ultimately that ends the question of whether or not abortion is or should be legal, or whether or not it's humane.
The problem you have, though, is people have different viewpoints on this, and no matter us as Christians see it, trying to get people to see it our way is going to be completely different. They have a viewpoint that it's not, it might be living, but it's not a person. It's a form of a being that isn't really a being. And we see it, yes, it's God's creation, it is a being. And it begins right then. And anything beyond that is murder, basically, is how I would say a good portion of us feel.
Absolutely. You know, that brings up an interesting thought, sparks a thought in my mind, which is another hot button issue, which would be I'm drawing a blank, capital punishment.
Ah, see, you have that too at your age.
Oh, right? Yeah, it happens every once in a while. So capital punishment. So this is the Catholic and Protestant conversation. So I used to be Protestant. Like I said, I converted. And one of the biggest, I guess, kind of stumbling blocks for me, which I always find it interesting when folks talk about their conversion, because it seems like every single person I've ever talked to that converts has a different reason or a different stumbling block to what they think is their hurdle to overcome to become Catholic. And mine, I was hugely supportive of capital punishment and the death penalty. And the interesting thing for me in regards to being pro-life is that, and I wouldn't have necessarily considered myself pro-life previous to becoming Catholic. I wouldn't have, I guess, myself or, you know, with Kara, you know, had an abortion, but I also wouldn't have really taken a stand like I would today. As I became Catholic and became very, you know, strongly pro-life, the death penalty idea just kind of faded away on its own. Go ahead.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, I'm glad you interrupted me.
And you probably didn't realize this.
He didn't even notice that I said he interrupted me.
Of all of the things you tell me every day that I see you,
yeah,
that's probably one you convinced me on. Because I was pretty strong capital punishment.
Absolutely.
And I've changed my viewpoint on that.
Burn them all and let God sort it out.
That's right.
That's how I was before.
I've changed that viewpoint. I'm basically at the point where I can see your viewpoint on that, and I've more or less taken that viewpoint also.
I think like I said, it was very interesting to me. I was very strongly pro-death penalty. And as I became pro-life, I think the thing that I immediately recognized was you can't be both. You either have to take a stance on life being sacred, period, meaning from conception all the way to natural death, or life's not sacred. And you can't have it both ways. If you feel that, and this is my personal opinion, if you're pro death penalty, then you very naturally would end up probably being pro-choice if you don't believe in.
Yeah, the hiccups.
Yeah, I do. He's always making fun of me. You give the guy a kidney, and he immediately thinks.
I just didn't know.
You don't get the hiccups.
I almost had one right there, I didn't want to.
That's because my kidney.
That's probably.
The kidneys have rejoined to have forces together. Okay. Well, I'm glad I was able to turn you.
You did.
Into a pro-lifer from conception to natural death and not the death penalty year.
Well, I was always a pro-lifer, but not for criminals that do horrendous things.
Yeah.
I always felt they didn't belong on Earth.
Right. So you were just judgmental.
Yes, I probably was.
So there's been lots of things going on this week for the pro-life group. Another thing that went on this week here locally, and I want to congratulate all the kids that received their first reconciliation. The second graders of the local schools had first reconciliation this week. So I have one daughter that's in fifth grade, so she has received first reconciliation. And I have others, obviously, that haven't. So I've only gone through this once. I had somebody call me this week and go, okay, we have our first child's going to go to first reconciliation. What should I expect? And all I could think was, well, it's been 3 years. I don't really remember what to expect. Oh, just, you're going to show up. There's going to be a few priests there, and it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. So now, as a Protestant,
you have a tendency of saying things like that.
Just
show up to this radio station. Don't worry about a thing. And, everything will be just fine.
Is that what I did to you?
Yes, you did.
Well, I told you to be here at 6. You got here at 6:15. You were late.
No, I wasn't. I was trying to get in the door.
Oh.
It said go to the other door.
Oh, brother.
All right.
So first reconciliation, you're a Protestant, so you don't go to reconciliation, right?
I guess I don't.
So what kinds of questions do you have about reconciliation? Yeah, I put him on the spot.
I really don't have any.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. We'll just wrap this radio show up right now, and we'll have nothing left to talk about. So that was one of the big, that was probably the other big hurdle that I had when I was becoming Catholic, is I was going to have to go sit in a room with a priest and tell him all of my sins, and it's a very humbling experience. So I actually have probably gone in 8 years from absolutely dreading going to confession to now I enjoy going as often as I can, which I probably should still go more often.
I should think so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have all kinds of stuff to say. It's never a short conversation. I typically have to take like a notepad.
Well, I would.
Full of notes. And tell them all the bad things that I've done.
I would imagine they have some thoughts too, wouldn't?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a long conversation. Yeah. I typically would like to just take them out to lunch and you know, schmooze them up a little bit, and maybe they'd be nicer on my penance, but it doesn't work that way.
I think so.
So I try and go probably once a month, maybe every 6 weeks if I don't get there often enough. I need to go right now. I was going to go this week with Father Michael out at St. Pat's on Monday, and I blew him off. I mean, I texted him and told him I couldn't make it. But so that's the other thing I was going to tell you. Originally, you know, the sacrament, typically you see like the confessional boxes, right? And you have on TV, there's the sliding window.
Right.
It's not like that. It can be like that. But I like to go face-to-face now. So I typically make an appointment, go sit in his office.
Oh, that's good.
There's usually like butterscotch discs or Werther's something like that. Make it a little nicer. But I always love watching the TV shows where they make it out to be like probably the, you know, pre-Vatican II era confessional boxes. So that's not something you think you'd enjoy, huh?
I would probably prefer the box.
The box, not having to sit face-to-face.
Yeah, where they wouldn't know who I was.
You know, they probably recognize your voice.
You can't disguise it. It doesn't have any one of those things that
one of those voices.
Lowers your voice.
Now, that'd be fun.
Well, that's okay if they recognize it. I mean, you know, but...
So one of the things that...
There might be a small percent of doubt they don't really know.
Yeah, they know.
Okay.
The one thing that I came to realize was I probably am not going to tell them anything they haven't heard before.
That is probably, I don't know.
Well, I hope not.
You're my son-in-law. I don't know.
I'm not going to tell them anything they haven't heard before. I'm not going to tell them anything they're not going to hear again. I remember my first three confessions, I ended up with the same priest. He's an older priest here in town. He's retired. Father Horton, great guy, but he's a retired priest. So he just happened to show up the first three times I had confessions at different places. He always happened to be there on that day, and he's retired. So I don't know how that happened. It must have been that he was the right guy for me. So I sit down the second confession ever, and I go through, the typical stuff and how horrible of a person I am. And he just sits there. I'm clearly done. And he just sits there and sits there. And I didn't know, if he'd fallen asleep or what was going on. He was just waiting for me to keep going. So I finally looked at him, and I kind of, touched him on the shoulder. I go, Father, I didn't kill anybody. I'm done. And he laughed, and we had a good chuckle.
Is that it?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
Are you curious as to why Catholics go to confession and other Protestant religions don't? Or Protestant religions don't?
Well, why don't you explain that to me?
Well, as the Protestant, I thought you were going to explain it to me. I think as Catholics, we like to go, well, first of all, we consider it a sacrament. So in the Catholic Church, there's seven sacraments, and reconciliation is one of those sacraments. How many sacraments are in the Protestant faiths? I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Let's don't go there.
I think there's six. So I did go to a confirmation here locally for a Lutheran church. I'm pretty sure there's six. So as Catholics, we believe in confession because we believe that in Mark chapter 6, that when Jesus sent the apostles out two by two, he gave them authority over unclean spirits, and that he said, whose sins you forgive are forgiven them, and whose sins you retain are retained. And so we feel like from that language in the Bible that it's Christ's ordination of the sacrament of reconciliation so that we can remain one with God and have those sins forgiven. And then, of course, you have to do penance. Are you familiar with penance?
Yes, I am. I've heard of it.
You've heard of it? Mm-hmm. You have to do penance every day in your daily life, don't you?
Probably.
You have to deal with me all the time. See, confession would be easy for you because you'd go in and you'd tell them your sins, and they'd say, well, your son-in-law Jason's your penance. That should be enough for you.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I just want to tell all the kids congratulations on making their first confession, their first sacrament of reconciliation. They will very shortly be received to the communion table and receive the Eucharist. So I look forward to that coming up here in the next few months. That's always a great time of the year. And we will be back after these messages.
60 Seconds with Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen.
The Holy Spirit reveals the Son as the Son reveals the Father. When our blessed Lord was on this earth, he revealed the Heavenly Father. It was only thanks to him that we knew how much love the Father had for us. The night of the Last Supper, Philip said to him, show us the Father. And our Lord said to him, Philip, have I been with you all this time? The Father and I are one. It was the Father's love that sent the Son, so that our blessed Lord was a kind of a prism, just as when the earthly sun, the sun of the heaven, shines through a prism, it splits up into the seven rays of the spectrum. And so, too, it was thanks to our blessed Lord that we understood the full love and goodness of the Heavenly Father.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
We are back, better than ever.
That's good.
Catholic and Protestant Conversations with Jason and Kurt. I'm Jason.
I'm Kurt.
There's not anybody else here, so I guess we'll... So I'd like to have a reflection. Every week we'll wrap up the show with a reflection on the daily gospel. Again, this is pre-recorded, so today's Thursday, but we're going to cover Sunday's gospel reading, which would be Sunday the 29th? What's Sunday? 29th. It's the 29th. So the gospel reading is from the book of Matthew, chapter 5. I'm going to go ahead and read it. And then this was the only thing that I told you that we were going to do tonight, right?
That's right.
Everything else I just threw at you last minute. So I want to commend you for a job well done on our first show.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's about the first thing you've ever said.
Well, I'm going to follow
nice
that up.
About
yeah,
me.
I'm going to follow that up with something.
Okay.
A funny story about you. How about that? Before we get to the gospel real quick, can I share with the folks what we talked about the other day at lunch?
At my expense, I guess I have to give you the option to do this because of the fact you gave me your kidney. So go ahead.
And don't you forget it. So 4 weeks ago, was it? 5-6 weeks ago, we were on with Bob and Lynn, who are going to follow us this in the next hour.
Oh, ha, ha, ha.
Talking about...
Ha, ha, ha.
Talking about me donating a kidney to you, right? And they recommended... And John agreed to let us be on the radio and have our own show.
That's true.
So for the last 4 to 6 weeks, I don't remember how long it's been exactly, you and I have been saying, well, what are we going to talk about? Right?
That's right.
So Tuesday this week, 2 days ago, me, you, and Kara went to lunch, Flat Top, great place to have lunch.
Yeah.
And I said, Kurt, what are we going to talk about? And you started waving your arms in the air, pumping your fist, because you had come up with the greatest...
You like this idea?
The greatest topic that we could
talk about.
It was
a good topic.
You ready, folks? Pets. Kurt wanted to talk for an hour about pets.
It wasn't an hour. I just said people like to talk about pets.
Kurt, how many pets do you have?
I don't have any.
So what would you like to talk about? By all means, the listeners here in Central Illinois... would love to hear your
take.
I'm
sure there's a lot of pet lovers out there.
Yeah, so what are you going to say to them?
That they all have their own little stories about their pets that...
Kurt, this isn't a call-in show.
With us.
Today's Thursday.
Is there an email that they could send us their...
They could send me an email.
Okay, have them send you an email if there's anybody that has any stories about their pets.
All right, so
we'll do one little pet story.
All right, so they can email me. At J Bramley, which is B-R-A-M like Mary, L-E-Y, at M-B-I, which stands for Meyer Bramley Insurance, so mbi.agency. And there's no .com after that. Folks, all you know, I should have picked a .com. I know you get on me all the time, but it's mbi.agency. Or, you know what would even be better? They could like our Facebook page, Meyer Bramley Agency on Facebook, and tell us two things. One, their favorite pet story, and maybe include a picture of their pet. And two, obviously, like our page, we're going to have a drawing coming up for a $100 gift card to Cafe Italia for Valentine's Day. Have you gotten anything yet for Jamie for Valentine's Day?
No.
Then you better go.
I got her a card.
Well, good. You could put
because I bought her a birthday card, and then I saw the Valentine's cards.
Was it buy one, get one free?
No.
Well,
I bought them at the same time, knowing that I never do that. So.
Go to my Facebook page, Meyer Bramley Insurance. Like the page. You can be entered to win a $100 gift card
right.
to Cafe Italia.
All right.
And then you'll have it taken care of.
That sounds good.
All right. So we're going to talk about pets now. Or no, wait. We're going to talk about the gospel. So this is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain. And after he had sat down, his disciples came to him. He began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the clean of heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they insult you and persecute you and utter every kind of evil against you falsely because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward will be great in heaven." So that we got lucky, I think, this week. This is our first show, and we have one of the most common readings out of the gospel.
It is. It's one of the most popular.
Yeah. When you take in all of the Sunday readings and the daily readings that it appears, and then also a lot of times for funeral and weddings, it tends to be one of the most common. obviously referred to as the Beatitudes. So I did give you this as a headliner that we were going to talk about this.
Yes.
Because I see you have some notes over there.
I do have some.
You've read it already.
I did.
What'd you think?
Well, you know, it's been a long time, actually, since I've looked at these and really went into the depth of them. And they actually get deeper and deeper, which I'm not versed to maybe go to the depths of them.
This is Bible study for the common man, so don't worry.
Yeah, I'm the common guy, and I just have a surface approach to it. But it's actually preparing you or one to go and get ready to meet God is basically how I see the overall picture of this, and each one is a piece of your makeup that you want to refine. And I think it's a gradual process. And I think if a young person starts doing this versus an older person, like myself, I would say that they would be further along than someone if they keep waiting and waiting to be prepared.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. I think the first couple definitely explore a longing for a deeper relationship with God. And then the second group would be that transformation piece that you were talking about, first of all, earlier in the show, about being transformed into Christ, right? We're all called to be Christ-like.
Right.
And you talked about being transformed. So I'd say probably one of my favorites is blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And I think that it wasn't the first few times that I had read this gospel that it really sank in. I always thought of poor as being the impoverished or you know, poor financially. That probably comes from, you know, obviously, again, in my everyday world, helping people with their finances and that kind of stuff. The poor is not the piece that God was talking or that Jesus was talking about. He was talking about the poor in spirit. We right. forget that in spirit part, and really talking about having a poverty of spirit or being humbled before the Lord, being willing to accept the things that we can't do on our own, and being able to recognize that God has a plan for all of us and that he has a plan for our lives, and that we become more at peace, which leads into one of the other Beatitudes, the peacemaker.
And how I saw that was it's the arrogance of, it's the opposite of arrogance, is what I'm trying to say. It's that humility, that it's that getting to a point where we all love to gloat and be on top of everything, but the people that are poor in spirit or you know, the opposite of arrogance, are the people that are going to be right with God.
Absolutely. Which was one of your favorites?
I've always liked Meek.
Meek?
Well, if you want to read the one about me, blessed are the meek,
for they will inherit the earth.
Yeah. And that one is, I think, the gentleness and your self-control and that condescending spirit. And once again, you're up on top and you're looking at people, no matter how much money you have, maintaining. That's why it's hard for wealthy people, in a sense, because that money gives them power and they feel like they're above everybody else. And learning to control that over reaching aspect of a human, and to keep it so that you are friends and you relate to everyone around you. I think that's so important, and not try to be above everyone else.
Yeah, I would agree. I know also in the New Testament, Jesus says that it'll be harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven
right.
than a poor man. So I think you're absolutely right when it comes to meekness. You know, one of the other ones that I always think is very powerful, and again, in the current translation of the day, I think it tends to get lost, and that is in regards to mourning. I think that we tend to think of mourning just as, you know, I had a loved one who passed away, or Kurt, in your case, one of your pets died. So blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted. I think, you know, it really takes on a bigger meaning than just mourning from death. I think it takes on that meaning of really all suffering. And I think that it's important for us to remember that there's a beauty in suffering. I know you and I talked about this when we talked about the kidney donation and that kind of stuff, that there's a beauty in suffering. And obviously Christ came to earth to suffer. I mean, really, that was the sole purpose that he came to earth, was to suffer and to complete his earthly ministry through that suffering. And I think that a lot of times people become angry with God, especially when they suffer, and they don't understand that there's a beauty in that suffering. And when we acknowledge that it's through suffering that God brings us closer to him, that it's through suffering that we are really more changed into Christ than we could have been during the good times, and that it's through that sorrow that we learn to be compassionate and kind and really more Christ-like. To me, I think the mourning and the suffering is sacrificial.
But that's also God's blessing, that's his hope for you. As you're going through that, he's promising you that there's going to be better, something better in the afterlife.
I would agree 100%. I think a lot of times we, you know, one of the good questions that we can ask ourselves is, how does my suffering, and we'll just take suffering and replace it with mourning, how is my mourning or how is my suffering bring me closer to God? How does what I endure, maybe on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis, what is God trying to do in my life through that suffering to get me to understand how he wants me to be more reflective of his son, Jesus Christ? And I think if we stop and ask ourselves that, especially in those hard times, it allows us to be able to hopefully see the benefit.
And I'll say this from a personal side, I've always felt that when I'm going through a difficult time, what helps me is praying for other people and take the focus off of myself and focus on, there's a lot of people out there hurting, and there's a small inner world. I have close people to me that are friends and relatives, and a lot of them have serious cancer issues. They have serious health issues. And so I take that energy that's trying to drag me down, and I try to push it out. And, you know, and I did that going through the kidney situation, and it helped so much.
Yeah.
And I think if everyone could start doing that, I think it would really give them big returns, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think it allows you to see hope. I think the other thing, someone, my spiritual director, relayed a similar type of situation to me. And he said, when we pray, because a lot of times, unfortunately, we get down on our knees when something bad happens. Whenever we pray, before we ask for what we think we need, or before, you know, before we talk to God about our problems, list off all the things you should be thankful for. And when you start your prayer from a position of thankfulness, I found personally that by the time I get done with all the things I'm thankful for, the thing that I thought was bothering me or that was bad or that was a problem doesn't really seem to be that big of a deal anymore. And in your case, the same thing. When you think about the suffering of others.
And another thing that comes to mind when you're speaking of all of that, and that was family. When you have family support you in a big way, that takes that burden. You're not carrying it by yourself. Your family's carrying it with you. And no matter the outcome, you know, whether it be positive, negative, it's always going to be better. It's always going to be more tolerable.
Well, and then I think the Beatitudes are all obviously wrapped up by those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. That one, I think, to me, has always been fairly easy. Obviously, Jesus was persecuted. And I think if you look at what the world did to him, then right. it's pretty evident to see that the rest of us are called to probably go through the exact same thing. Obviously, you know, most of the apostles were all persecuted. And then all of them but John was crucified or killed. And so I think that if we're called, if nothing else, then to be persecuted as Christians.
And that's as Christians, it's our obligation to treat everyone with respect and with the proper, what do I want to say, you know, dignity or whatever it may be. It's that, especially in a church, when people are organized in a group religion and there is, you're in a church, it's the most important thing that the people within that church treat each other with respect. And no matter what the situation is offer forgiveness and treat each other with respect.
And I think that does a great job of summing up our conversation here today. Respect when it comes to the sanctity of life, respect when it comes to religious education, respect when it comes to people's pets. I think you did a great job picking your topic for today.
Oh, good.
You should get a pet.
Should I?
Yeah. So again,
I'll talk about my pets sometime.
All right. Well, when you get a pet.
When I was a kid.
We're going to ask people to send us a picture and tell us their favorite pet story.
There you go.
Again, they can email me at jbramley, J-B-R-A-M-L-E-Y, at mbi.agencyno.com. And give us a story, and we'll talk about it next week on the air. And like our Facebook page, Meyer Bramley Insurance, and they will be entered to win a $100 gift card to Cafe Italia for whatever holiday is coming up that I typically...
You said Valentine's
Day. Valentine's Day. I get confused because Kara and I have never really celebrated Valentine's
Day. I can see that old tight wad there.
Well, everybody have a good week. Enjoy your week with your family and your friends. Follow the will of God, and we will see you again in a week.
Okay, thank you.
Catholic and Protestant Conversations with Jason and Kurt, brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Catholic and Protestant Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.